Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. Anyways, tonight's topic's going to be fairly interesting. The topic is about neo-fascism and a group on a college campus in Nebraska that called, what they did is they set up an organization called Turning Point, which targets conservative, it is a conservative-based organization that targets liberal professors who they think does not promote American values. Well, anyways, this one girl named Katie went to a Nebraska university and was confronted by a few university professionals. One was a teacher who was working on campus trying to obtain her PhD, who decided that her organization was so intrusive that she made a sign called Neo-Fascist, and she carried it in front of Katie's table and moved back and forth across the table. Then she started calling the girl a neo-fascist Becky. A Becky is a white person who promotes only their white values in the form of exploitation, and it's also the Urban Dictionary says that a Becky is also someone who trades sexual favors. Well, anyways, it got ugly is what I'm trying to say, and NPR covered the story. Now, there's a couple key items that I'm going to explain to John and Don. Albert cut out for a while. He's coming back after his movie. But basically, this is the situation. Certain campuses have designated areas where you can promote your causes. It doesn't matter what the name of your group is or what you're promoting. There are designated areas. Well, on certain liberal campuses, the conservative groups are shunned, and a lot of people just plainly don't want them there. In this case, a university faculty who is still kind of like a student attacked this woman. She also said the F word. She was very outrageous. It got recorded on Snapchat and Instagram and uploaded. Well, eventually the Nebraska community was up in an uproar, and the Board of Regents at the university was primarily conservative. So the teacher who protested to the student eventually got moved out of the teaching position but not fired, which means that she's probably just an assistant to the professor in the background now. And people were outraged that they were tormenting a young girl just trying to promote her ideology, which basically was pro-capitalism, anti-socialism, and the professor felt that it was a stab against minority groups, diversity, and such things like that. Now, I do want to add that the professor who verbally attacked the student was a white woman who said that her father taught her at an early age that politics was a blood sport and that she should fight tooth and nail to the end for her beliefs. I'm not going to do any more of an introduction. I'm just going to pull the co-host in. So I'll say hi to John first. Last week it was Don. Hi, John. How are you?
Greetings in the name of world peace, Jane Hoffman.
Thank you. World peace, too. Hi, Don. Thanks for joining us tonight.
You bet. Hi, guys. Hey, John.
Well, I just want to make a quick announcement. I paid for premium. Ben seems to still be on hiatus. I don't know if he's having issues or time constraints. He's handling his business, I guess I could say. I also forgot to bring up to you guys that the word snowflake means a liberal who is adamant in their view. So the two Urban Dictionary terms tonight are Beckies, white people who unethically assert their white power, and snowflakes, liberals who won't give up. So what did you guys think of my little description tonight for the show? And I also want to talk about Kanye West later and his comments on slavery.
What? My goodness. Okay, go for it.
Well, were any of you listening?
Yeah, we were listening. I know that this is I'm not familiar with the turning point, and I tried to look for it, and there's a band and then some other local things that are named turning point, but I can't find anything about
them. Yeah, I'll find it on the web while you're talking.
All right,
okay.
That's no problem. But yeah, no, I mean, in terms of, you know, the conservatives being able to express their point of view, it's college campuses' responsibility to let every viewpoint be expressed. You know, this is even many of the specialized colleges, state that are still connected with state colleges systems, they deserve to have everyone's expression and point of view being expressed. That's the reason for
it. I agree.
And so, you know, this is something that a lot of people who are up in arms about in terms of the quote-unquote liberals, not liberal colleges, not denying access to any, you know, expression is kind of ludicrous. I know that we here in Reno have had a huge problem because we've had swastikas painted on fine arts buildings, And so that's a conundrum that is very, very difficult to adjudicate or figure out a reason or what we should do. And we decided to do nothing. The swastika stayed up there until they were painted over. So it,
was that at Marquette?
No, this is here at University of Reno, Nevada, Reno. So we had that happen here. And, you know, I'm the vice president, second vice president of the NACP. So I get to see a lot of things that are going on that other people don't see. I just finished a police civilian advisory board day training. We were with the police all day and put them in their cars and certain situations and classroom work. So we get to be right in the mix, and we know a lot of what's going on around here. And, you know, things that are fragmenting our society are everywhere. There's no one place you can turn.
I did want to throw something in there before John goes. Turning Point USA is a 501c3 nonprofit organization founded June of 2012 by Charlie Kirk. The organization's mission is to identify, educate, train, and organize students to promote principles of freedom, free markets, and limited government. They also carry signs that say socialism sucks. So I think what ticked off the professor is that they kind of have a watered-down version of what, like they feel, I think this professor thinks that they're being brainwashed. And also they promote libertarian values like free markets, free people, taxation is theft. It's actually, I wouldn't even know if I would call it conservative. It's almost like they don't want to be in government bondage either.
Okay, so I'm looking again.
Well, I liked your commentary and what you said about your own experiences. Let's hear what John has to say.
Sure.
Well, I think the First Amendment is about free speech as long as you're not advocating, overthrowing the government like with violent force. Which they have that option too, but still that's free speech, and that's America. I think that's a good thing that people express their voices. So I'm kind of getting to a point where I think, as far as politically, we have two sides, and they're both right now just mocking each other. They're arguing with each other. They're basically making snide remarks at each other. But we are the United States, not the divided states. I think. At a certain point, we kind of understand philosophically left and right are just at the different ends of the poles. And so the question is, as a united country, how do we move forward? Like, we're all the same team. You know, we're all the same family. So I can kind of accept people's opposite view. You know, I even accept evil. Like, maybe we need evil. You know, maybe we need bad and good. Maybe we need darkness as well as light. So I'm trying to understand opposite views, where before I would say, well, you know, let's get rid of, you know, bad people or cancer or this or that. Maybe these things are in our lives that we have to deal with. So I'm actually kind of lightening up, you know, because after a while, it gets to the point, it's not productive just to argue down someone. They're not going to accept what I believe anyway. You know, they really at their core believe opposite.
I think, John, one thing that I wanted to impress is that this Turning Point group that had the problems on the Nebraska campus in the Lincoln area, it was at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, I believe. The fact of the matter is that they ended up polling some of the students, and the consensus was that most of the students on there were not of political persuasion. They were neutral. They were just on the campus to get an education, and they weren't polarized. So the market that they were kind of tapping was kind of open, like open to ideas and not really part of any type of identity politics. So it just goes to show that with you saying that you're being open-minded, there were only a few people that got flustered that they were even on the campus. And, you know, I do think my son is kind of indifferent to politics, and he doesn't freak out unless he really hears something in the news that really rivets him. And I see a lot of young people in that boat. They either don't want to talk about it or deal with it. And I work with three Muslim people who attend the University of Minnesota, Duluth.
And that's a good thing. You know, I think we need diversity of ideas anyway. And, you know, actually, I think it's a good thing. I think people need to listen to each other a little more. And, you know, because there's a certain point where, again, if someone's open to exchange ideas, that's great. But most people aren't. Most people have already made up their mind. They know what's right and wrong. You can't convince them otherwise. And so you try different approaches. You know, sometimes you try strong-arming people. But I think at the end of the day, I did have an interesting thing which kind of went along with what we discussed a little last week about reparations and things of that nature. And it's just an interesting thought. And that is, and I think we want people to prove their place racially on an open free market. And by that I mean, when Jesse Owens or when Jackie Robinson, you know, Jackie broke the color barrier in baseball, I think the concept was he was competing. And you could imagine if he went up to bat and they said, yeah, we need, you know, some African-American players to get a shot. And so he gets up to bat and they go, you know what? Maybe he came from a disadvantaged neighborhood. So just give him first base, just give it to him. And he goes to first and the fans are going, what's going on here? It's like, well, he gets a free ride. He had some disadvantages. And then next pitch, it's like, well, you know what? Families don't have the education opportunities as other people. Just give him home plate, give him a run because he's been set behind. And everyone would be going at the game. It's like, we want to see what he can do. Like, just go out there and prove what you got. And then after a while, they go, you know what? Just his great-great-grandparents were slaves and they had disadvantages. Just give him the win because that's the name of the game is winning. I think people would go, that's not what we want to see. We want to see competition. We want to see, you know, people just do their best and prove it. And I think everyone's got their opportunity in school. Just go, reopen a book, study, apply yourself, and you know maybe the deck is stacked against you a bit. Maybe you have disadvantages, but just compete and see what you can do. And I think you know that's what America's about. Just free enterprise. People speak their mind. People say your piece, and just do it. Go with it. And you know, if people listen to you, fine. If they don't, that's okay. I mean, I'm at peace with that.
I have a few comments, and then I'm going to let Don go.
Yeah.
I think people like Jackie Owens and the other player you mentioned, they didn't even hardly speak on their own race, and they were forced to confront it at certain periods in their life when they didn't even really want to. But the fact of the matter is applying yourself for education is still kind of puts you in bondage. Because you have to go in the fields that are marketable. For example, a lot of people nowadays are going into healthcare management. That's a big field. Oh. And I have three African friends who are majoring in that. They're young kids. And I think a lot of times society still kind of dictates what the measure of success is. And some people go all the way and they follow it. Like they go all the way. I heard about this lady on This Weekend on the radio. It was a Christian station, actually. She went through law school. She got her whole Juris Doctor. She said the first day of law school, she didn't feel it was the right fit for her, but she just pursued it and stayed in the profession 10 years. And then eventually when she had her first kid, she transitioned out and became a writer. In other words, she wasted all that time and money going into something she didn't really have a heart for. And I don't know,
well,
maybe Don can comment because I think I'm losing my train of thought.
Well, the thing is, though, when I apply for a job, there's several jobs that, like, recently I tried out for. And what they wanted was people with, you know, a master's or some kind of a major, like a degree. It didn't matter what my nationality was. They could care less. And half the people interviewing me, they were black or they were Asian or they were a minority. And all that mattered at that moment, did I have the education level, which I didn't. And anyone can, it doesn't matter what race you are, you can go to school and open up a book. You can get a 4.0.
Can you give me an example of one job title you applied for that required a higher education?
Oh, yeah, public relations for a dental surgery firm in UCLA off of Wilshire Boulevard in Santa Monica. You know, and there are three specialist doctors that do oral surgery. And they wanted
so why would you even apply for that if you weren't qualified? Nothing personal. I'm just trying to get to the bottom of it.
Well, I threw out, I was trying every possible job thing, and one of them was a PR thing. The ad didn't say, well, it said specifically that they mainly wanted experience with sales and media and that kind of thing, and that a degree would be preferred. And so when I went there, I interviewed well. They were very interested in me because my ex, you know, my work with YouTube and performing and selling. And but there were three other people that were there, we've been interviewing. You know, I knew that they would come in stacked with their degrees. And I mean, it's not just that job. I applied for like 200 or 300 places, various jobs. And I'm just saying, half of them I did not apply for because they wanted a degree. And I knew I didn't have it. It didn't matter if I was African American or white. You know, we go to college and you go, I'm white. Okay, you get a degree. No, you got to work your ass off. You have to get your 4.0 or your 3.6. Nothing's given. It doesn't matter what race you are. You may have.
Okay, let me throw this in at you and Don so Don can kind of answer both our questions.
Yeah.
These kids are going to campus. God knows what they're majoring in, and they walk by a table where it says capitalism is great, socialism sucks. Now, if you're a young guy starting out an organization and having kids promote values of freedom and anti-government, and you're trying to recruit them based on what your notions of what you think the world should be, like a normative view, is that unhealthy? And was it unhealthy for the woman, the English professor, to walk by who was a PhD in training and to run to her office and get a sign and call this young girl a neo-fascist and a white privilege promoter and swearing at her, among other things? And what I'm trying to say is that do these organizations on campus help facilitate somebody's vision of the future, or are they just distractions, Don?
I'm not sure. One, they're not distractions. Definitely not. This is just plain ignorance. But you know, for the most part, this campuses. If you have a sign that's that derisive, I think that that should be gagged and something else less derisive.
Socialism sucks.
Because socialism
or
sucks.
Neo-fascists right. Get lost. Which one?
Right. Well, all of it. You know, it's going to be great. But, you know, the professor going off is just a crazy woman who's kind of gone too liberal. You know, there are limits, and these folks are obviously breaking them. You know, I've heard what John was talking about, and you know, he painted the perfect picture of what an idyllic world would be like, but never has there been that elusive quality of equality. That's a word that will never be justified or finalized. So this is something that we have to, you know, keep in mind that the whole experience of each one of our immigrants rubs off on us our own particular ways. And the African-American black experience is was the second worst besides our indigenous native population. So this is
I have a question, though, Don. Like, let's just say you're a black person and you get a scholarship, let's just say, to Drake University, and you major in economics, and you never even go into a political sphere of any kind. And then when you get out of college, you get a job in your field, and you live the good life according to the local customs. Are you unscathed by that experience if you're that kind of person? The experience of poverty and exploitation and other things that your same culture has been through?
Are you talking personally or are you talking in general?
I'm talking as a scenario, not a real one.
Okay, because in some ways that could have expressed some of the things that I did. I had the journalism degree with a political science minor. And so I went into journalism sales, advertising sales primarily, and for much of my career. So it was, you know, something that I did. I didn't have the political bent until more or less I moved to Nevada. I was on the wrong side of the fence for a little while, and then I am now a principal, I guess, community leader. This is something that the political science minor came in, and it came in later in life. So, you know, you never know when those traits and training come into play at particular times in your life. But right now,
well, some people, for example, moms against drunk drivers, mad. Like, so they might have lost a child before they started getting involved politically.
Right.
And somebody might have had some other political cause. You know, like they might have had a medical issue that the hospital didn't pay for, and then they decided to become an advocate for a better insurance program. So it doesn't – different times in our lives bring up different results.
Exactly. So, you know, this is something that when you were mentioning the Jackie Robinson scenario, you know, his period of time, and then Jane had kind of hit it on the head. When you mention him, you know, he was a one in a million billion shot. They had the Negro Leagues for a long time. They had different places that they could have had in management and other places some extremely intelligent, qualified people. And there was no equality. There was no chance for them to go to the next level or to the highest pinnacle because they were completely shut out because of their race, who they were. They never got a chance. And to this day, that culture exists.
And the people who did get a chance, like you said, were so few that it was practically a joke.
Right, and that's what it was for a long time until, and you know, in many instances, I won't say, you know, until Branch Rickey said, "Oh, fuck it, let's just let him," you know, and that's, you know, that didn't happen. So lynchings, I guess there's another lynching of three people down in Oklahoma City about 2 weeks ago or so. I'm not sure. I haven't read it.
Lord.
But, you know, and this is still
that kind of wants to bring up the energy flow of the radio show. I want to move away from this topic for a minute, but I'm just going to summarily say that calling people things like neo-fascist Becky or snowflake, like liberals, and fanning the flame with coined terms is really only, it doesn't broaden people's understanding of people who oppose them. It only breaks down society further. But with that, I did watch 90% of the Kanye West interview with TMZ, where he brought up that topic that, in a sense, because slavery lasted 400 years, it was basically a choice. Like, at some point, people could have felt obligated to set themselves free. And then there was a black guy in the back of the room at TMZ, I believe he was an employee, who confronted Kanye. And most people feel like Kanye West has gotten so separated from reality that he forgot what it was like to struggle or even identify with his own race. And I'm wondering if either you or John followed that story.
I actually watched some of that, and they actually started attacking the fact that he was taking less meds than what he'd been prescribed. And they asked Dr. Oz, and they started asking all these different experts, and they were all shooting him down, like he's not qualified to make medical decisions. If a doctor tells him to take something, he shouldn't mess with that. And I'm sitting there thinking, they're analyzing everything Kanye says because he was basically a pro-Trump, basically he ranted about Trump on his Twitter account or, you know, whatever he uses. And they don't like that. And I understand that. But that's – and, yeah, he's acted up a little bit crazy, but hasn't they all – didn't Katy Perry go nuts? Didn't Mariah Carey end up in an institution for a couple of days? A lot of these celebrities, they have crazy stuff. In fact, Mariah was saying she's bipolar personality. This is on People magazine. So, but she's also not anti-Trump, so we have to feel sorry for her. So I don't know.
The way that he brought up his pro-Trumpness was so casual. He was just wearing a MAGA hat, and he just said that he's my guy, you know, like. And then they were talking about how Trump, his name appears in a lot of raps even before he became president. And then, like, he wasn't really trying to make a political statement, but I don't know why he brought that slavery thing up, but I just remember about 6 months before the Trump-Clinton vote that Kanye said he was going to run for president in 2020. So I just think that he goes off in tangents and pretty ludicrous directions at the time. Like, he was pretty laid back the whole time he was talking to TMZ. But the fact of the matter is he goes off on tangents a lot. I do think he does have delusions of grandeur that, like, he's more important than he really is. But I don't think that – he doesn't even probably have a view – he's married to an Armenian, and they, as John and Don know if they've lived in California, that whole thing about the Armenians being exterminated by Turkey in the 20s, like, I don't even know if he's aware of that type of situation with his own –
absolutely.
Bride's family.
Absolutely. I used to live in Pasadena, so for 7.5 years. So the Armenians, they ruled. This is a man, Kanye West, who actually is trying to say something, and nobody can decipher it because of the position that he is or is in or
right,
at.
And he's not trying to be ugly necessarily.
Correct.
But people took it that way.
Absolutely. You know, when you're talking about slavery, in the interview, everyone saw that he tried to keep his track or correct himself in a way to what he was saying about when you've, you know, got 200, I think it was 200 or 400 years to just do something and you're still in the same place, then that's a potential type of mentality that has to be rectified.
Well, remember old Nat Turner in West Virginia who he turned on the white people and he killed, I don't remember how many people he killed, but then took off. Like, he made a gutsy move, but it wasn't going to last long. But I still kind of admired him for trying, even if it was violent.
Yeah, well, he died.
he did, but in his past, he made a statement, and people still talk about him nowadays. Now, there is a world philosophy,
wow.
Like when you read the Bible and stuff, like you get the feeling that God intended Israel to be slaves in Egypt several hundred years, and that certain people were put in bondage for some kind of future fortune or what do you call it, a prophecy? Like, but it's really not God's will that people are put in bondage by other men. I mean, it might be part of a prophecy, but it's not really God's will, I don't think.
Well,
wow.
Interesting point.
John, how do you comment on that?
I just wanted to say thank you, God, I guess.
Okay, I know I'm shooting from my hip, Don. I don't got all the facts, but I did look up Nat Turner's Rebellion. So I'll let
right.
John talk while I'm looking it up.
Well, it is an interesting point that Jews have suffered 4,000 years of slavery and several genocides. So I think they seem to handle adversity pretty well. And I think
damn,
something.
Did he really say that?
He's talking about the Hebrews now, not the blacks.
They seem to have. Right. They seem to have handled adversity pretty well. I'll take that one to my grave. Go ahead.
Well, I think if you look at the success rate in the business world, I would say they're doing quite well. In fact, you know, it's interesting to imagine that 7 of my 8 employers in L.A. actually are Jewish in a town where there's still less than 1% of the population, and it's 40% Hispanic. So I can safely say New York and L.A. being, you know, the financial centers of this country, that, yeah, they've done quite well. And not only that, you know, it's interesting. You know, my neighbor above me is Jewish. My neighbor to the right of me is Jewish. My neighbor to the left of me is Jewish. I'm the same, my brothers and sisters. They're doing all right.
Well, they're doing all right in terms of the fact that they're doing, but they are, you know, the ghettos were the Jewish encampments, and that's where the word came from. And for the most part, they're still in the ghetto. You don't see many Jews on the farm or, you know, in the small towns anymore. They're all located in ghettos, in cities. An urban area, and that is in itself kind of a prison or a ghetto, and that's one of the things that I don't know if that's great for life or not. You know, the concentration all the way down from Sunset Boulevard all the way down Malibu, all the way down to Fairfax. You know, that's that's little Israel. And you've got some of the richest in history of man. So, you know, they're doing well economically, but I don't know if they're really happy.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, I mean,
I've never known too many that are happy because they love to negotiate, they love that deal, the art of the deal. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but it can enslave you in its own right.
Oh, yeah. You know, happiness is one thing. I mean, the caricature Jewish mom is, of course, someone who just complains and nags on you about everything, you know, But what I'm saying is I don't see entitlement programs, welfare programs for Jews. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but I'm just saying there's not a lot of low-income housing for Jews in California.
Well, when the entire banking system and the entire movie system can make enough money to, I don't want to say sponsor or subsidize or give just anyone who has that heritage a possibility for position, and you know, who knows, a writer. You know, these writers, a lot of these writers are Jewish, and a lot of writing is garbage. But they still have the opportunity to get paid and perpetuate that class and culture. So you don't have a huge population when you own everything. You don't have a huge population to be able to support as not having to go into poverty. At least not in, you know, at least not in America, you know, unless you're crazy. And if, you know, if you're crazy, they can't let you go in.
You look at comedians or actors or entertainers or performers who are Jewish, you know, like Rodney Dangerfield, you know, and there's several, like when you start looking at their what their real names are, they have Jewish names and they just change it to, you know, to an Americanized version so they can be popular. But the point is, so Jerry Seinfeld goes to pitch something. Do people laugh at his jokes because he's Jewish, or do they laugh because he's funny? You know, does a show succeed? Do you go to a movie because, well, some Jewish people produced it, you know? It's Weinstein produced it. Or do you go, it's a hit movie, I like it, it's funny, even if it's crap, you know? I think that's where the problem runs into is there some preference, maybe opportunity to succeed? Doors are open because of race or whatever. You want an attorney, get a Jewish attorney. You want a dentist, get an Asian doctor or dentist. You know, stereotypes, but there still has to be performance behind the stereotype for it to exist or to work.
I have a comment on your thing. Whether you're Jerry Seinfeld or Jimmy Fallon or Chris Rock or Chris Tucker, some people are just funny naturally, whether it's their gift or whatever, or their background, culture, and experience. And I overheard something recently about, on, I think it was an article, Richard Pryor was like a risk-taking comedian, but Bill Cosby wasn't, in the sense that he didn't take issues like and turn them into like a Lenny Bruce scenario. He just kind of he made jokes that were funny and tried to temper his humor in a way that would appeal to a wide range of audiences. But I don't think race factors in that much to comedy. But there's a cultural component of power transition that constantly changes in comedy, and people like Kathy Griffin learned the hard way when she insulted a group of people and then was taken off major funding for her comic routine.
Well, you know, one of the things about Richard Pryor and Bill Cosby was that outside of the inner cities or the small plantation towns, there was no expression or place to have expressed the African-American experience satirically or comedically. There was no way that you could, that Lenny Bruce would come out, you know, and necessarily tell jokes about African-Americans or whatever the case might be. You know, there was no expression of the experience, except that's what, you know, on the back porch, talking to your, you know, your cousin, your friend, and, you know, doing the dozens and all that. That's where it came from. That's why the comedy became, that's why everything became, because finally things became normalized. So, you know, these are the time and patience are the things that get us through here, and the comedy aspect of it is, you know, a lot of this crap that comedy that you just mentioned from these Jewish comedians is essentially crap. That is meant, you know, it's something that is
I know,
funny
like
to
we're
a
all
segment.
Just it's not like I've done research on this topic. I just think that some people are naturally funny, and sometimes I see it within a cultural context, and sometimes I don't. But even people like Whoopi Goldberg, who gets stirred up on The View, a lot of her comments come from a cultural context.
Well,
who is
the thing
about which one from The View?
Whoopi Goldberg, she's on The View.
Right. Okay.
Yeah,
okay, go ahead, John.
I don't have much, whatever Kanye says, I know what he means, and few people do. But
it's not
going to
ruffle your feathers?
Oh, no, because people don't understand. Like I said, preface the whole conversation, the subject, they don't understand this context. When you're, you know, pretty much a rich kid or good, well off, and then you mentioned it with an overwhelmingly rich Armenian family that, you know, it's just, you've got.
I don't think Kanye or his wife are really in touch with the everyday struggles of people. And for him to say he's going to run for president scares me. I just don't want another out-of-touch celebrity even in that field anymore.
Too bad. There'll be others.
Some people think that example, Trump is not an out-of-touch celebrity. That's why he basically won. I was watching some of those Miller High Life commercials from, you know, the 80s and 90s. And they were all based on the blue-collar guy who works at the, you know, the steel mill or the mine. He goes out to the bar after work. He has a couple beers. He goes home, and, you know, he has his, you know, dinner made by the missus or whatever. And it's just that blue-collar guy, and that comedy or that kind of ad doesn't exist anymore because we don't have guys working at steel mills and
like
doing
Joel
these kind
the plumber.
Of things.
Like Joe the Plumber?
Well, you know, you got a few of those guys, but it's not the same thing. But we all face prejudice in certain areas, either you get old or... In my case, when I was in junior high, I was a really good basketball player, really good. And I remember 7th grade, the gym teacher, actually 8th grade, the gym teacher walked into the room. There's about 50 of us guys. He pulled out the tallest white and black ball players, about 8 or 9. He said, "You guys come over here." He said, "The rest of you guys, do whatever you want. Just go to the other side of the gym. Do whatever you want." And it's like, I'm going to work with these guys. And right then I was like, I was discriminated. Like, I didn't exist. I didn't matter. And I remember from that point, I realized I was never in sports going to have preference because they're going to, and I was one of the smallest kids in the school. There's only two guys in school smaller than me, and I knew that was the way it was going to play out. But the funny thing is, I didn't get mad. I worked really hard with the guys I would play with. And after about a month, the brothers would invite me to play with them because they saw I was the scrappiest, hardest playing guy, and they knew that I would pass them the ball. Like the other guy, like if they're playing with each other, they wouldn't pass each other the ball. We called them gold sucks. They were just going to shoot the ball. If you passed it to them, they would never pass it back because they just wanted to score. They knew if they gave it to me, I was going to set them up and give them the best shot that they could make. And they loved playing with me. And they actually would call me to join their teams, and they actually called me the N-word. And I didn't know anything about really much about racism, and I thought it was a compliment because I was one of the crew. I was a Negro, but not using the word Negro. And it wasn't until
go ahead. Albert's on the line, FYI. Go ahead.
It wasn't until I moved down to L.A. that suddenly, the, you know, I found out, oh, the N-word is just this terrible, you know, racist, horrible thing. I worked my butt off to be called the N-word, to be one of the boys, because I love sports.
And that
sports.
Was up by Oakland, where you grew up?
Bay Area, San Jose. You know, and that was in the 70s.
Damn, John. Damn, I didn't know any of this about you.
Yeah,
oh,
John
yeah.
grew up in Northern California, Don. He was
a
Wigger.
That even exacerbates things. Because anybody, Chicago, if she he grew up in Chicago, you do, you know, you learn all them tricks. You know that if they call you that, they are disrespecting you. But
you guys know what a Wigger is?
Yeah, but everybody does. But the thing is that you came down there, and that was what you wanted to hear. And that was, that tripped me out.
I wanted to be black, and I wanted to be 6'3", because my favorite basketball player was Jerry West, a white player, but he played for the Lakers. And I knew it being a 5'6", or 5'10", or even a 6-foot white guy, white boy, I wasn't going to be able to play pro. I knew if I was 6'2", 6'3", I had a shot. And I would measure myself every day how tall I was. I also loved baseball. Football I enjoyed, but I didn't like the violent of the, you know, like guys getting maimed. So I like baseball and basketball because they're more artistic. But, yeah, I wanted to be that guy. And so I wanted to be a brother man, you know.
No wonder you admire Lolo.
When I earned the N-word, I was elated. I made the club. You know, I was no longer prejudiced against. I was accepted. And so I understand discrimination, but my point is I didn't get mad or angry or protest. I just worked my butt off hard. And I knew I wasn't going to be the star because of my height, but I knew I could get on the team. And I think that's what people that are racially discriminated is, you may not be the, you know, the president or the number one guy, but the point is you can get in the club instead of being, you know, in the welfare line if you just work your butt off. I mean, that's what I
believe. Yeah, there's a cool Spanish guy. I think he plays for the Utah Jazz, and he's really not that tall, but he's been playing pro basketball since he was 14 in Spain, and he's by far one of the best players on the team. And he was the highest scorer the other night against the Houston Rockets. Before I pull Albert in, I want to just read one thing about Nat Turner. Their rebellion went on for about 2 weeks. They gathered different blacks from different plantations and stole horses and guns. And they ended up killing an estimated 120 people, including 60 white men, women, and children. In the aftermath, the state tried those accused of being part of Turner's slave rebellion. 18 were executed, 14 were transported out of state, and 32 were acquitted. Turner hid successfully for 2 months. When found, he was tried, convicted, and sentenced to death and hanged. Across Virginia and southern states, southern legislatures passed new laws to control slaves and free blacks. They prohibited education of slaves and free blacks, restricted rights of assembly for free blacks, withdrew their right to bear arms in some states and to vote in North Carolina, and then required white ministers to be present at all black worship services. So I was just, the only reason I brought that up is because I thought the retribution was interesting and how they restricted free blacks as well as those who had been slaves.
Right, now see there, that's the inequity. They didn't even allow them to have guns. Read about those Oklahoma City, I have not yet read it.
Lynchings?
Oklahoma City lynchings.
I'll look it up, but Albert, you are on the line right now. Good evening, Albert.
I also found Turning Point USA. The racist right-wing group.
Yep,
Turning Point
I found USA. It too, Don, but you... What did you think about it?
Oh, it's very white. They're trying to propound the primary principle as financial freedom and involvement. But it's basically right-wing empowerment of students. But I didn't see the individual article that you were talking about. Go ahead. Hi, Albert.
Oh, none.
Did you go to a movie tonight, Albert?
No, I was, spending time with my mom, watching a movie, but it was already about to finish, so I figured I'd just finish it, watching it, and then I'll just call.
Wow. John, I wanted to tell you Ramon Smith and Jaron Moreland, two 21-year-old men, were lynched in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, in April of 2018. Three white men and one white woman have been arrested for the crime.
Correct. But there was also a third, and she was a black woman, I believe. It just says the two?
Yeah, in this particular article.
Right. So, black people beware. They still haven't taken off the Missouri no travel ban for blacks. This is a country that has not been able to take a look at itself in the mirror, and they've got shit all over their face, in their mouth. Coming, it's really horrible. But they hide behind it with we love the military. That's what disgusts me, is that once you've served your time, I've seen people who've been ill from basically serving their terms, and the federal government, in terms of extra benefit and insurance, they only go so far, and they're on their own. It's really a disgusting practice of our president and everybody else who claims to be behind the military and the people who serve. It makes me sick when I hear them. Oh, we love our military guys, and they're just the greatest. We're in Syria. And we're in Afghanistan because of the precious metals, the rare metals that they've got there easily mined. And then in Syria, it's the oil. We want to be able to get, they're right next to Iran and Saudi Arabia and Libya and everybody else. So what the heck, Iraq, Kuwait, there's oil there. And they're not, they don't feel that they've pumped out the maximum amounts that they can. So we're going in there with, under the auspices of Israel wants to keep peace or whatever. I don't even know what kind of bullshit excuse they're giving. But they're going to go in there and pretty much, we are going to go in there and pretty much probably try to take over parts, bits and pieces of Syria that are oil and mineral rich. That's the reason
I don't
there.
Think so.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to try to go into Syria until it becomes an international crisis and the dust settles from the civil war there.
It's been an international crisis for 2,000 years. But,
Albert, what Albert has to say tonight.
Well, I have to comment on John's story, as a white guy being accepted to the black people, around black people, and I was wondering if you guys ever saw a documentary on Netflix about a racial division, a story about a white woman that says she's black, she identifies as black. Have any of you watched
that? I thought I read an article about it 6 months ago.
Yeah,
and someone who actually
the
changed their appearance.
Yeah, well, it's a movie came out in 2018, so and it's the racial division in this documentary about this white chick. I haven't seen it myself, but it's about a white chick that identifies herself as a black woman,
I haven't seen it. But when I worked in the projects in Virginia, my black friend called me. Well, go ahead.
I think it's the same woman about the article you read, because it just follows her story throughout the years on a documentary, but I haven't seen it, so I just know very little about it. But yeah, it's probably about the same, maybe the same person, but who knows?
Well, when I worked in the housing projects in Virginia from 85 to 86, my best friend in the projects, who also worked in the front office, called me black woman, and I called her white girl. I called her honky, and she called me black girl. I don't remember how it worked, but I felt pretty much immersed in the culture at that point for a while.
So you were proud there.
Cracker.
Nobody called me a cracker, but when I went to North Carolina State for 6 months, one black person called me a cracker. I was the only white living on campus. But I think it's not so much a wanting to be another race. I first identified with the black race because of all the Martin Luther King specials I saw when I was little, between ages like 8 and 12, and I saw the people suffering with, like, getting whacked by batons during marches and stuff. And I started developing an empathy for that race. I didn't know much about the Latino race until I moved to Los Angeles. And then I learned about a lot more other cultures. For example, we talked about the Armenian, how they were tried to be exterminated by the Turks in 1915. So I think a lot of people identify with other races. It doesn't mean, like, they want to change races, though.
Well, maybe,
how about
Jane,
you guys? Have you ever identified with another race?
Well, Jane, maybe you
that's
just
the
had
most
jungle
ridiculous
fever.
Shit in the whole wide world.
I only had jungle fever 2-3 to 4 different times in my life. It wasn't consistent. I was married to a white guy 10 years.
Right. Well, the bottom line is that virtually, I don't know of it. Let me put it like this: in terms of African American black men, males, because I do know a few females, quite a few, but black males, there is no way in hell we would want to be anybody else's race. I don't even, not 1 second. But go ahead.
Well, one time when Lauren was like 9 years old, he said he wanted to be white. But then at another point in his childhood, he said he wanted a black mother. So I think he was just confused.
Well, an interesting thing is that over the last couple hundred years, about 3,400 blacks have been lynched, about 1,300 whites. Interesting. A lot happened in the post-Civil War period in the southern states. Recently, it looks like I see a couple of cases in 81 and another one in 68. It's not a very common thing. I will say a couple days ago, they were going to execute 22 Christians in Afghanistan. And across the world, there's a lot of religious killings, beheadings, things like that always going on. So I don't know if it's – I mean, I know we're looking at America, but across the world, there's racism of all kinds. I was talking to a gal a couple of days ago, Cinco de Mayo, and I just, you know, part of my job, I welcomed and said, hey, happy, you know, Cinco de Mayo. And she said, I don't celebrate. She looked Hispanic. I do not celebrate it. She's very adamant. She said, I'm from Central. I mean, she's, you know, Central America, either Guatemalan or, you know, El Salvador or Honduras or something. But basically, there's kind of an anti-Mexico sentiment from the South American culture. And it's just different, you know. Basically, they don't like they feel Mexico is very prejudiced in that. Like, they're the oppressors. They don't allow them. They have a border issue with that. So you go anywhere in the world, there's people who just – I mean, I don't think black or white racism is a big issue in North Korea. It's just or in China. You know, I mean, those are closed societies where they're basically rich and poor people who have, you know, some have power and some who don't, and people are exploited. It just doesn't matter what color your skin is in those countries. So I think that's – I think we just happen to have that issue in our country, but not as much, you know, in other countries.
I agree.
But that's because – that's because that's how our country was made. Our country is made of, I mean, even the indigenous people were indigenous at some point. You know, this country was made by people coming over, immigrants and the slaves and everybody else, and everybody, you know, has their own story. So that's what makes us great, and that's why that's one of my own philosophical reasons for accepting the immigration reforms and many of the immigrants, because that's how we were built, that's how we were formed, that's how we were made, and that's how everybody knows that. And again, another lie that they're perpetuating, not looking into the mirror. I don't have a problem with a wall being built. I don't have a problem with a wall, but there has to be two walls. Because there are just as many or more immigrants coming through the northern border as there is in the southern. So, you know, that's another lie, another hypocritical stance that needs to be looked at and rectified. If equality, again, there we go, equality is to be idealized for some kind of consummation.
I want to make a quick announcement, you guys. I've had a pretty long weekend. I worked about 40 hours since Friday, and I did pay for a 90-minute episode tonight. And by the way, Blog Talk Radio had a special. It's only $33 a month the next 12 months, so I purchased it. But I wanted to tell you that two things. Ben is going to be returning to the show after he installs the internet at his house because he has terrible reception, and that's why he hasn't been calling. And also, I kind of got off track, so I forgot where we were. I don't know where we are right now. But I want to close the show out in 15 minutes and make it only about a 90-minute show tonight.
Yeah, you've been a little off tonight. I don't know what, but it's all right. Everybody.
Let me tell you guys a funny story as long as we're on the subject, okay? So yesterday there was an employee at my job, and this is her real name. I should maybe say it on the air. Matawalabu Abdullah. Her real name is Matawalabu Abdullah. Well, she was 8 hours late for work because she had a family graduation. And then my car was parked in the driveway and her car was parked in the driveway. And she tried pulling the company van out from the garage between our cars, and she hit mine. Now, keep in mind that I added a shift. Like, it was a fill-in shift. I wasn't scheduled. So that didn't make me happy. Then I went to my night job, and the guy shut the safe by mistake, and it's really a crazy-ass safe. It took me 3 hours to open it. I was like the nutcracker or the safe cracker. And then a bunch of crazy stuff just happened all weekend, and that's why I'm a little off.
Okay. Well, thanks for
And then I had to go to work again tonight from 4 to 9 with about 3 hours of sleep.
Oh, so all right, well, we'll get off the line as soon as you are ready.
I just want to make an overall statement that I'd like to hear from Albert, maybe. Like, you know, like, my whole life in the beginning, growing up in a sheltered suburb, and I've said it before, I did when I left for college when I was 18, I started out at a Midwestern university for a year and a half, but then I did transfer to North Carolina State because at that point in my life, I knew the epic crisis of racism was over. Like, I was naive enough to think that, you know, that Lyndon Johnson had passed all those laws for more equity. And by the time 1980 rolled around, race wasn't that forefront on my mind. But we started out this show tonight talking about identity politics and, like, people just labeling and pigeonholing people because they didn't fit in with their organization or concepts on the campuses that they don't approve of. And I still think we live in a divided world, but as long as we have the idea in mind that we're going to help others and find common ground and not always be divisive, like we sometimes are on this radio show, then I think that we can look for the good in everybody, because even if I were a professor that hated an organization on campus, I know there used to be some kind of group on a campus, like the La Roche, or do you know what I'm talking about, Don? La Roche?
Not really.
That La Roche guy who used to be all over campuses with his far-fetched ideas? Well, even if
right,
I walk by a table, yeah, Lyndon LaRouche or somebody,
Lyndon,
even
right,
if I walk by a table where there were people that I didn't agree with at all, I'd never throw the F-bomb at them or call them a derogatory term or slander them. You know, I would just maybe have a private discussion and then just walk off. But I just think that with all the vitriol in the world, like, we have to look for common ground and common solutions. And but I don't like groups that advocate just far-fetched ideas that are out of the box.
Well,
Facebook, Twitter,
and
YouTube, survival is at stake.
Political people,
they
don't see politically in line. Like Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, they get rid of other people and claims that, like, oh, they insult, if you insult somebody or even use bad words, you know. Some of those people, not all, but some of those people, you know, get kicked out of the service or, you know, get their YouTube channel closed off. But then, you know, if they politically, you know, talk about something and they sound they're saying bad stuff, like, you know, they don't have to say a bad word, but they just have to, like, sound really bad. And it kind of varies, but I mean, like I said, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, I think they're just, and most people, not just me, but most other people think they're just shutting politically other people down, you know, and I just wanted to mention
that.
Well,
I have heard of, I think you told me, Albert, that YouTube has recently shut down certain people's accounts for being inflammatory.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't people have the right to? Like, are we supposed to be popular? Do we have to be polite? Do we have to not offend people? I mean, as long as you're not, you know, telling someone to kill other people or you're not inciting, again, illegal acts, what's wrong with someone being a jerk? You know,
well,
it's like,
I don't know, but
like,
I know that 50% of YouTube comments are very inflammatory.
A lot of them have
an attack style. Go ahead,
that's
Albert.
What free speech is, though.
Well, the problem is everybody's a jerk on the internet, but only some people get banned and some people don't because of how they're politically in line.
I mean, if you see a movie and there's violence or there's a jerk in the movie, do you say, well, we'll edit the movie, we can't have that in there because it offends some people? I don't see what the press, what the constitutional grievance is. I mean, don't we want freedom? Even if it's against something we don't, as long as someone doesn't hit my face, you can wave and yell and say all the things you want to. I mean, you have that right to.
Yeah. John?
Well, otherwise, you're just going to run into a society where they all, you know, they edit. And what I'm talking about is where YouTube shuts you down. If you say something and someone complains about it and you're just expressing your thoughts, you're not telling people to kill someone, they shut you down. So pretty soon you're just going to have this generic, because like who decides what's offensive? Someone doesn't like Trump. Is that offensive? Okay, well, then that offends me, so let's shut down everyone who is pro-Obama. That offends me. Well, I don't think that's right. You know, whatever your viewpoint is, I think you have a right to express it.
Yep, and that's the problem, that those powerful people behind those channels on websites are just basically doing what they want.
Yeah, I mean, who's going to, you said, who's going to say what's offensive? That's exactly the point. You've got people who are expressing one thing that's very, very similar to people who are expressing another thing, and the only way to discern what is another thing is who the people are. If you're friends or family, or if you're in a certain allegiance in that one place or spot, as opposed to not, or you know, have been offensive to maybe one or two things in the other spot. You know, this is a subjective thing, and it's not something you can define or calculate. It's just something that is, and that's what we have to have advisory and vigilant committees, alter committees to almost everything. Because you do that, it's a subject.
Right. I missed about 1 minute because I was taking out my contact. Albert, would you like to maybe draw a conclusion?
No, I'm good.
Okay. I just wanted to let you guys know a heads up for I'm going to be in Minneapolis, St. Paul, May 11th and 12th for a wedding, but I will be back next week. There was some guy on Facebook who I have to go back and look. I think he's a preacher. He's one of my Facebook friends. He was trying to put Bill Cosby in a different category as far as his behavior, but it was some kind of psychologically laid out concept that I want to bring up next week. However, we will have the show at the regular time, and I might be out at Don's in the third week of June because I have a hearing in Sacramento for my teaching license, and then I'll be heading down to Southern California sometime in that month. After the hearing.
All right.
Do you guys have any current events?
Oh, no, I have every one. I just had a successful sheriff's forum with our sheriffs, and I'll have another one, sheriff's forum, May 15th. And then we've got, I'll be putting together other forums here, too, from our candidates in the number one state in the country for this year's elections, and that's Nevada. So just keep an eye on.
How did they become number one?
Because there are only two purple states in the country, and we're one of them, and we're the truest purple state.
Is North Carolina the other one?
I doubt it very seriously. But I think it's from, like, Delaware or something like that. But
by the way, John McCain, I guess, is kind of in his final moments of life. And he said
right.
that he doesn't want Trump to show up at his funeral.
Right. And he'd rather have Mike Pence. But that's...
Do you guys think that
line.
Was petty?
Beg your pardon?
Do you think that was petty?
Very much so.
I think it was, but it is his prerogative. It's his funeral, and at least he's being true to his actual colors, because he really has been kind of the anti-Republican, I think. I don't know what his values are. It just seems like he's basically against his own party, or maybe he thinks he's a rebel or the maverick. But you know, he doesn't want Trump there. He doesn't like him. I think at least he's being honest rather than pretending that, you know, he likes him and he doesn't. He hates him. So I think that's good for him. It's his funeral.
I guess he's allowed, but also people who have brain tumors for a long time, they don't always act how they did before. So maybe it's starting to affect them.
Well, he's been acting for a long time.
No, yeah, exactly. No, this is something he's
at my funeral. I want a 21 bun salute, not a 21 gun salute.
Yeah, right. Whatever. But the I guess he was talking to Joe Biden.
It was just a joke,
Don. Yeah, I know it was. If people don't walk out of the house, they might have it. Walking down the streets to hit the casino. But
very funny. I have been doing good overcoming my addiction, and I did want to make a point tonight because I was trying to feel sad. I was starting to feel sad that Ben couldn't call in, but I realized John and I together, because he started this new enterprise with me in March of 2014, we've done 379 shows since March of 2014, and Albert joined us in March of 2016. And Don, I think you started joining us consistently in 2016 too. So kudos to you guys for your consistency. We don't know our...
I thought I started in 15.
You might have, but we've had 621 minutes on YouTube this month, which translated into 10 hours, and we had 41 hits this week on last week's show. That was only in one day. I think we actually had 102 hits on the Blog Talk channel. So tap into the YouTube channel every now and then. Albert knows the website, youtube.com/flyingcharm, and listen to us once in a while. We're pretty good at times. Especially our show on Alton Sterling and constitutional constraints. That was an excellent show by John, Don, Mike from New York, Albert, myself, and Ben. So that was really a stellar episode. Does anyone have any last final comments? John, do you?
Well, you know, probably if you had Slick run one show talking about political fishing, you probably would have 50,000 views on it.
Well, he has a great YouTube channel. John, by the way, I have to reload all your shows. I mean, all your radio songs, and I don't have the MP3 format for some of them. So if you could resend me some of those in MP3 instead of MP4.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, well, I'm going to end the show. The only song I have loaded is Tragedy, so I'll just play it one more time, and I'll try to work on that this week. Good night, y'all.
And good night.
Peace, love, and non-neo-fascism. God bless y'all. It's your turn to say goodnight, America.
Good night, America, and good night, all you anti-Trump people and pro-Obama people. We love you. It's a beautiful world.
Okay, I'll talk to you in a few days. Thanks for the ending. God bless you. Peace out.
Peace and love.